From beach towels to tea towels, and from mugs to water bottles, the TNT Shop has it all. Browse our shop now at tntradio.live. Broadcasting globally and with a worldwide audience. Welcome to America's Living Room with Angela Stanton King. This is today's news talk, TNT Radio.
Wow, welcome back to another episode of America's Living Room. Happy Saturday to everybody out there in the world tuning in from wherever you are. I am just so grateful to be here today. Another episode of America's Living Room, and we have so many important guests waiting to bring you all some information. And that's one of the things that I love, absolutely just love about TNT Radio. These guys allow you to get the information that you need uncensored, and that's why I'm here, and that's why all of you guys are here tuned into this episode of America's Living Room. Now, I want to talk to you guys about something that is very, very important before I bring in these two guests. We know that elections in America are happening right around the corner. There's this huge governor race between Brian Kemp and Stacey Abrams down in Georgia. And Stacey Abrams has been quoted a couple of days ago as saying that the answer to reducing inflation is abortion. I don't know if you all heard me correctly, but this is someone who is running for the governor's seat in Georgia, a Black woman who claims to be the voice for Black people, that gives up on a news station and says that we can reduce inflation by aborting our children. I just cannot believe that we're living in this time and day that someone could think that the answer to our problems is aborting our children. And that's why I have inflation experts, Robert Wright and Jan Trafflett. I'm hoping I pronounced it right. She'll connect me when she comes on to discuss with us some of the things that we can do. What's really going on with inflation? Whose responsibility is it? How do we get around it? And is abortion the answer? Everybody, welcome to the studio today, Robert Wright and Jan Trafflett. Guys, thank you so much for joining the show.
Thank you so much.
Awesome. I guess we'll start with ladies first, Robert, if you don't mind. Although my father is also named Robert, so you've got some some favor here with me. But my favorite aunt, his sister's name was Jan. So I'm going to go ahead and go with Jan. The ladies here, Jan, Stacey Abrams says the answer to inflation is abortion. Talk to us, please.
Well, it's a very complicated subject, but I would agree with you that that is not the answer to inflation. And I consider myself pro-life. So thank you for raising that incredibly emotional topic, and that there are many solutions beyond abortion for curbing inflation. And we're going to be getting into some of those thoughts today in relation to, diving back and looking at history at the 1970s and the inflationary times that that characterized that decade into the 80s, early 80s, with our book about Wilma Sauce called Fearless. So thanks so much for having us on. And you pronounced my name A-OK. So thank you.
Thanks so much. So you and Robert, you guys are inflation experts. You have a book. I want to talk to you about all of that. But a lot of us here, we're confused. We're not really that experienced on what's going on. All we know is that gas prices are sky high. We know eggs are almost $8 a carton, milk, meat, everything has gone up. We're scared. And we don't know what's going on. So can you guys just please, Jan, we'll start with you and then go over to Robert. Just give us some insight into what's happening here. Who's at fault? What can we do to protect ourselves and our livelihood?
Yeah, well, I think you nailed it, that about how much, how frightening it is to see prices going up and not understanding the reasons why. And I give you so much credit for in your journalistic career of bringing this into America's living room to be talking about this and trying to shed light on it, which was exactly what financial journalist Wilma Soss did in the 1970s with her talk show that was originally called, that eventually was called Wilma Says. But she would give tips to people to stretch their budget, but also try to explain some of the more of the macro issues going on. Obviously inflation is something that, impacts everything that we do. And you were going into a winter where we're worried about the price of, heating our homes in addition to feeding our families. And so it's a natural instinct to try to figure out, okay, how bad is this going to get? And what can we do to survive until we get this under control? And my co-author, Bob Bright, has many, many thoughts on that too. So I will defer to him on explaining some of the details.
Thanks, Jan. In regards to the abortion thesis, I would say that Wilma Soss is spinning in her grave right now, except we know that when she passed away in 1986, she was cremated. So I don't know what ashes do, but this is the exact sort of thing that she used to talk about on her NBC radio show, which ran from 1957 to 1980, nationally syndicated, over a million viewers per week. And she would explain things like inflation. And give investment tips and also more general tips during the 1970s, during the Great Inflation. So, for example, what she would say to people today is you should B3H, and that would stand for budget, hack, haggle, and help each other. And by budget, she just would mean back then make every dime count, but today, more like make every dollar count because of inflation. And in terms of hack, just look for, life hacks that make sense for you. You know, places where you can not spend money where you used to spend money. Do like more DIY stuff. Use everything you have or sell it. And use community resources to the extent possible. Haggling used to be bigger in Wilma's time. It's still possible in some contexts today. That's where you ask for a lower price, either pre-negotiated via something like a coupon, or in some circumstances, the seller, you can just say, I'm interested in this product, but I'm not willing to pay that price for it. Would you accept some lower amount? And finally, just help each other. The biggest real trap that people can fall into and are falling into is going into debt at very high rates of interest, because that just sucks, a lot of your budget, a lot of your income away to very little end, and also paying high fees when you miss a bill. So when I was growing up in the 1970s, the Great Inflation was occurring. My family was very poor. And I distinctly remember my mother and my father would go to people and would say, "Hey, can I hold the 20 for you until the end of the week?" And it wasn't until later that I really understood what was going on. But basically, it was an interest-free, friendly loan that they would also grant when they were flush to their friends and neighbors.
Now, Robert, I don't want to interrupt you, but you said that you grew up really poor. For some reason, America doesn't believe that there are white poor people here. I mean, when we talk about the disadvantaged and the underserved communities, it's always people of color. But it's interesting to hear you say, as a white man who is this inflation expert, guess what? I grew up poor too, so there are poor white people in America. I just kind of wanted to point that out, but please keep going with your point about the free interest loans. We have no idea what's really happening out here.
Yeah, no, it's just, be good to your family and your friends and neighbors and help each other out. It's very expensive to buy, especially within the inflationary period, but to buy retail items in small quantities, because the price per unit is very high. So if you can get together with some friends or neighbors or whatnot and hop in the car and go make a run to a Costco or a Sam's Club and share the membership costs, right? And buy in bulk and then split it up amongst yourselves, and you know, do that once a month or once a quarter or what have you. You can really get big savings by doing that. So I went to school in Buffalo, Angela, and I lived on Grant Street.
I am originally from Buffalo, New York. What school did you go to in Buffalo?
Well, I went to Buffalo State College for undergraduate.
Yes,
and Buff State, right across from the Psych Center. We used to say that we would graduate from college and move across the street. I went to SUNY Buffalo for graduate school. And I did a study as an undergraduate. It was a class assignment to go and look at the prices of retail goods in the area around Buff State, which was, you know, kind of depressed, and the Fruit Belt, and then to compare them to prices out in Cheektowaga and in Williamsville, which are viewers should know are more affluent suburbs.
Yeah, I am familiar with all of those areas.
Well, and it turns out that the prices were lower in Williamsville and Cheektowaga than in around Buff State and the Fruit Belt.
And I just want to be clear for anyone who's not familiar with Buffalo, New York, Fruit Belt is kind of like the ghetto. I mean, it's literally a poverty stricken area. So to hear that the prices were higher there than they were in Williamsville is just amazing to me. But please continue.
Yeah, it's because there was less competition. And a lower percentage of the population had, like personal cars that they can get around, to get to lower priced areas, to shop. So what I'm suggesting is by helping each other and not only making informal loans to each other to help people out of tough spots, but to essentially carpool to shop. So that you can spread the costs and go and buy in bulk, and drive those unit costs down.
Yeah, to get out of the food deserts. And I grew up in New Jersey in Elmwood Park and next to Paterson, New Jersey, and we witnessed the same thing there about prices being higher in Paterson for food and stuff because people weren't being able to travel out of that area the same way. But I love what Bob says about just relying on each other and being community oriented. And I think that some of that we gained during the pandemic and some of it we lost during the pandemic. But that initial instinct at the beginning of the pandemic for people who could afford to hoard still was not the sharing mentality that we would like to see. But in terms of just people, creatively collaborating to solve some of these and to lower their food bills and other bills. But think about like Dollar General and some of the places where you're buying one item, let's say of toilet paper. You might only have the dollar to get that week one thing of toilet paper, but yet if you went to Costco and collaborated with your neighbors and was splitting it, you could drive down that per unit cost. But it requires organization and being connected to your community, which has so many other big flow through positive effects. And that was,
let me ask you guys both a question. Why is inflation happening? We're hearing so many different news reports. I mean, they're saying, hey, Joe Biden's giving away all of the oil reserves. It's because of the war. Joe Biden is saying, hey, it's because of Trump. Can you guys give us some more insight into why we saw prices skyrocket the minute Joe Biden took office?
The government started printing way too much money or creating way too much money. Very little of it is actually printed these days. I just created a bunch of dollars to fund the pandemic stimulus programs and all those billions for pharmaceutical companies and all those billions for Ukraine had to come from someplace. And so they just created the dollars. And when you create dollars faster than the economy is producing goods that people want to buy, then that bids the price of everything up. And sometimes it's hard to see because not all prices rise at the same rate at the same time. Some will stay the same for 6 months or a year, and then they'll suddenly shoot up. Others will go up dramatically and then kind of level off. Some will go up and then go back down and then go back up again. It depends on the market structure and the things like labor contracts and contracts for other inputs, like oil is an input into gasoline, and wood an input into paper. And so a lot of it, it's just kind of unpredictable. All we know is that prices are going to continue to increase so long as the government continues to create money too quickly. So right now the Federal Reserve is trying to slow that money creation down by raising interest rates, but that means the cost to borrow money goes up, and that's going to put and has been putting a damper on business. First, we've seen it in the housing sector with housing prices plummeting, but other sectors will be hit soon, and we're going to start to see unemployment go up.
And at the same time,
first of all, let me just say that I learned something here, because I guess it makes sense. If let's just say in Georgia, let's just say there are 11 million people in Georgia and everybody's paying an extra $3 on a carton of eggs, right? So that's $33 million. So the inflation costs are actually what is funding, I guess, the war and some of these things that's going on here. And it's crazy to hear this, because it's like, if we can raise inflation in prices on the American people to fund what's going on in Ukraine, then why can't we raise the prices on American people to, rebuild these underserved communities across this nation and get the homeless people off of the street? I mean, that just makes me wonder if it's that simple to come up with all of these billions of dollars to send to Ukraine. Why are we not making sure that America and the people of America are safe and provided for as well? Jan, you were getting ready to speak. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, not at all. But you raise all interesting questions, that there is no such thing as a free lunch, and that, that we don't have infinite resources. And so how can we make good decisions that aren't going to come back to hurt people's pocketbooks, which were, but what I was going to say about just the whole issue of interest rates and the Fed's decision to continually raise, that people have been struggling, to get by month by, sometimes week to week and sometimes day to day with their bills. And now we have situations where, people's mortgages are going up dramatically because the cost of borrowing has gone up. And so it's not just that their food budget and their heating budgets, like now that, that we're in a situation where we're going to have real problems going forward if there aren't some steps quickly taken, that people are going to start, we're going to start seeing a lot of defaults on mortgages.
Jan, hold that thought for us. Everybody, you are tuned into America's Living Room on TNT Radio Live with your favorite host, Angela Stanton King. We'll be back right after the break.
You should hear what Shannon Joy is talking about.
Things are bananas, absolutely bananas on Twitter. It is the most important platform, in my opinion, on the face of the planet in terms of free speech. And you can tell because they are so intent on suppressing people like Alex Berenson, who was permanently suspended by Twitter, then filed a lawsuit that was in violation of his civil rights, his First Amendment rights, won that lawsuit, was able to obtain discovery. And when you witness what they found in terms of the conspiracy by Pfizer officials and the Biden administration and Anthony Fauci, the Trump administration, quite frankly, because some of this was early on in 2020 during his presidency, it is astounding. It is astounding. From the local level, little old me, a mother in Fairport, New York, to the national level in the United States of America, the attempt to suppress speech is unprecedented.
Shannon Joy on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
When a crisis hits close to home and across the globe, nonprofits are on the front lines, ready to serve.
Keep coming.
The demand for charitable services has skyrocketed, and nonprofits are rising to meet the needs. Healing. Nurturing. rescuing, honoring, protecting, caring, inspiring. The work of philanthropic organizations of all sizes across all missions has never been more important. And it's donors and volunteers like you who make all this possible. Thank you. Together, we change the world. The Nonprofit Alliance.
This is America's Living Room with Angela Stanton King on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Everyone, we are now back with our inflation experts, Robert Wright and Jan Trefler. And we were just talking about, you know, what's going on here in America, you know, with inflation and how, you know, a lot of us are being impacted by the war that's taking place over there in Ukraine. Guys, we've got about six more minutes before we wrap up. I want you guys to, of course, use this time to give us some more information and also let us know how we can support you, how we can follow you, and how we can get some more of your expertise when it comes to inflation.
Well, you can buy our book, Fearless, which is about a woman named Wilma Sauce, who we talked about briefly earlier. She was an inflation expert in the 1960s and 1970s, who was on NBC radio. And she vehemently tried to keep the US dollar linked to gold. And the reason she wanted to do that is to reduce the power of the Federal Reserve to create too much money, like we talked about before the break. So she failed in that, but that option is still available to us. We don't have to allow the federal government to impose an inflation tax on us to fund wars that no one voted for or programs that don't clearly work, like the Green New Deal.
Yes,
Jan,
and
we'll give it over to you.
Yeah. And I also wanted to put in a plug for a book that Bob wrote a while back, but Financial Exclusion. Do you want to talk about just for a moment about that, Bob?
Financial Exclusion is a history of the financial system in the U.S. and how it excluded different groups of people, including African-Americans, American Indians, women, and poor whites, like I once was. And how those people in those groups worked around the attempts to exclude them by entering the market themselves, by forming their own banks, by forming their own insurance companies, and forming their own brokerages and so forth. And Wilma Sauce is not in that book, but I kept running across her as I was writing it. And that was one of the reasons why I dug into Wilma Sauce and discovered that her archives were out in Laramie, Wyoming, and why I asked Jan to join me on writing the biography of this this incredible woman who was married and who in a period when married women weren't supposed to work, and yet she had three very fabulous and lucrative careers in public relations and in financial journalism. And in corporate activism, she used to show up at corporate board meetings and raise Holy Cain about the way that men were running America's largest businesses, even though most of the shareholders were women. And she did, she moved mountains getting women onto corporate boards for the first time, major corporate boards, and also reforming some of the electoral processes. Like she got some corporations like AT&T to adopt secret ballots so that shareholders couldn't be coerced into voting for management.
And so yes. I love the idea of just personal empowerment and that you don't have to wait for conditions from above to be set to start improving our lives. And I think that even today with an inflationary environment, I think that's one of the things about thinking about, okay, well, what can we do, even if, the Fed acts in certain ways, and even if we have a certain administration during enacting certain policies, we can still retain some measure of control over our lives to make it better.
That's why we call the book.
Yeah, you guys have given us so much information. I got to have you guys back on the show again, because we don't know if this is going to end, when this is going to end. Reports came out that Joe Biden was asking people over in Saudi Arabia to not increase the prices on the oils until after the election. So we're just all over here caught in the matrix. Guys, we've got 1 minute left. Please, either Jan or Robert, let them know how they can get your book, where it's at, and how they can follow you guys on social media to stay in tune.
Well, Wilma has a Twitter account. Sorry, yeah. Wilma has a Twitter account at Wilma Sauce, WILMASOSS. And the book's available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble and all the usual places.
Yeah, thank you. It was such a pleasure to be on with you. And thank you for talking about such important issues today.
Yes.
No problem. You guys have been absolutely awesome. I learned a lot today. Guys, thank you so much for dropping by the show. Everyone, you are in America's Living Room with your favorite host, Angela Stanton King. Up next, we have Larry Wu. Larry Wu was a policy consultant to the Chinese premier in 2004. And we're going to talk to Larry about whether or not China is a threat to the U.S. We'll be right back after the break. You guys are on TNT Radio Live. Thanks so much.
Matt Boyland here with a look at your TNT headlines. Australia and Fiji have signed a new security deal to counter challenges in the Pacific. Russia's new war commander has accused Ukraine of preparing to use prohibited methods of war to attack civilians in the city of Kherson. And Elon Musk is reportedly planning on firing most of Twitter's workforce if and when he's given the key to the social media company.
When the forgotten poor are suffering and in need of healing, they wait for a ship unlike any other. Mercy Ships, the largest floating civilian hospital in the world, with volunteer medical staff and crew who donate their time to save lives. Heroes of mercy, like these.
Every human being has the right to be treated as human, to have a place at the table of the human race.
If you could just see the look in the patient's eyes or the smiles that you get when lives have been changed, then it would make it all worth it.
We bring hope and healing to one person, but that person belongs to a family, and that family belongs to a community.
Together, these heroes of mercy and friends like you bring hope and healing to those who desperately need it.
Thank you!
Thank you!
To learn more about Heroes of Mercy, go to mercyships.org today.
You're listening to America's Living Room with Angela Stanton King on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to America's Living Room with Angela Stanton King. That was an awesome interview in the first half of the show where we were talking about inflation, something that is impacting us all. And up next, we have someone who is very, very, very special to me. So I had to ask him to come on this platform because Dr. Larry Wu actually does a lot of work within the Black community in regards to real estate and community building. But he is also the founder of UC Asset. And Larry also was a consultant to the, let me make sure I got it right, the Chinese premier in 2004. And so I want to welcome Larry to the show and talk to him a little bit about whether or not he believes that China is really a threat to the U.S.'s national interests. Larry Wu, thank you so much for joining America's Living Room.
Hi, Angela. Thank you so much for inviting me over.
Oh, no problem, Larry. You know, we absolutely just adore you in the Black community, all the work that you've done. You, of course, helping our organization with Auntie Angie's House, which is a property that was owned by your company. And you said, you know what? I want to do something to help give back to this community as well. So you and I have gone into an agreement to be able to have this maternity home in the historic King District that helps women with their children. So I want to nationally and publicly thank you for your contribution to our community. But outside of that, Larry, when you sent me over your bio, I was just knocked out. Like, I was like, okay, I know Larry for real estate, But I had no idea that Larry was this deep. Larry, talk to us a little bit just about your history and just working, you know, with Chinese and with China and the Chinese premier. And then we'll go into, you know, whether or not China is actually a threat.
Well, that was in the remote past. Sometimes feel like a different life, another life I have lived before. But just to, before I go into that, I just want to give you a very quick response of why we are. I personally really enjoy working with Black community here, because back in China, I was growing up in China. I went to college in the 1980s. Guess who is the most popular superstars back there in China? Michael Jackson. And I play basketball, and that is time, the epoch of Michael Jordan. Both are the Black people, and we, a generation of Chinese, admire American culture, and a major part of the American culture we admired are created by Black people, by people like Michael Jackson and Michael Jordan. And then I came to the United States. I admire American culture. I think I have come here and do business with American people. And I'm sorry to say that, but almost 100% of people I was dealing with are white. And I was like, I admire Michael Jackson and I admire Michael Jordan and all the other, you know, all the Black superstars, rappers and everybody. And I want to do business with the people, you know, the community where Michael Jordan grown up, where Michael Jackson grown up. And I'm not holding anything. I really enjoy working with all people from all race. But specifically, I think that is something I would really enjoy doing. So this is a response to what you mentioned earlier. And back to my work with Chinese government, yes, it's almost 20 years ago, I worked for Chinese government as a policy consultant. There are a brief period I actually work with the office of Chinese premier. And for American listeners who are not familiar with the Chinese system, we have a so-called double head system. We have a chairman, or you can call him president of China. Currently, the president is Xi Jinping, who is the most powerful people for China. But we also have a premier. The premier are supposed to handle everything, the daily business of the operation of the government under the instruction of the president. So if China is a corporation, is a corporate, President Xi would be the chairman of the board, and premier, counter premier is Li. Li would be the CEO. So I basically worked for the CEO of China back then.
Awesome. You work for the CEO of China. Now, we were talking about, and there's a lot going on here in America, and a lot of people believe that China is a threat to the U.S. and our national interests. I've seen situations in particularly where I feel like maybe they are trying to comfort us from like the inside out, because I know that they own like huge platforms like TikTok, and I've seen them like pay influencers hundreds of thousands of dollars to just influence people to live life a certain way, so to speak. And it seems as though while here in America, a lot of us are training our males and our boys on gender identity and pronouns, and that they can be women and stuff like that, that that's not happening in China. That they are really, really strictly training and raising masculine, heterosexual, tough men, and they don't even allow that there. Can you talk to me about that a little bit, or the difference in cultures?
Well, yes, China is a very different culture, but I want to put it this way. I don't think China is a threat to the United States, and either United States is a threat to China. These two nations has no fundamental conflict between us. And in the history, China had been at war with, you know, its neighbor countries, and the United States has been in on war with other nations, but there had never been a direct conflict between China and United States. And fundamentally, strategically, there's no conflict between these two nations. However, the current regime of China, the one led by President Xi, is a threat to United States national interest. But I want to put it this way. Xi is a much more threat to China's own national interest than he is to United States. He's doing all these crazy things back in China, and he's changing a lot of things. Like, you know, Angela, you mentioned the culture of China. Well, we have great culture. I really love our own culture. I love my own people. But Xi is turning but one thing great about China is the Chinese people are the most adaptive people in the world. We adapt to the change of the society, changing of the world. And there's a saying in China, like, if you live in Rome, you talk like Rome, you know? So when Chinese migrate to a different country, usually we don't try to change what people believe in this country. We try to fit in. When we back in, you know, 100 years ago, when China was in big trouble, we look around the world, try to learn from the most advanced nations, from America, from Europe, from all other nations, like what they do are right, what we do are wrong here. So we change ourselves. We call that reform. Reform is a very important word in Chinese culture, because if you're looking back into the Chinese history, hundreds and thousand years back, there were several major reforms. Most of them actually advocated by some of the best rulers, the emperors of China, changed everything fundamentally in everything. We are moving forward to become more adaptive to the situation of of what is happening around us. And what happened in China now is Xi is turning the clock back. Since 1980, China has been adapting a new reforming policy. We changed a lot of things. We become much more a democracy than we were before. And the Chinese people like me, we came to America, came to Europe, came to all around the world, and do business with you guys and do things in the way that is universally accepted by, you know, most of the other nations, most other peoples in the world. We do not try to do the things our Chinese way, which is an out-of-date way. And President Xi, he's such an arrogant people. He believe that some of the old teachings of China is still the best for the world. I was like, come on, that was something like 5 years old, 500 years old. It's not working for today's world. And he tried to turn the clock back. He tried to convince Chinese people that we have the best culture, we have the best system, we have the best everything, you know. In the world, we don't have to change ourselves. Americans should change us. Americans should bow down to Chinese. And his arrogance is hurting the relationship between China and the United States, is hurting China as well. He's doing some extremely unreasonable thing. And there's a number of people surrounding him, just flattering him every day, saying, oh, well, President Xi, you are the greatest leader of China. You are the greatest leader of the world. So he lives in the bubble. He doesn't know the reality of the world. And his policy is very dangerous, first for China, and also for the whole world, including the United States.
Whoa, that was a lot. We're coming up on a commercial break, but Larry, you, outside of what's going on in China, you and I have had some kind of off the record conversations about some of the things that's going on in the Black community when it comes to home ownership and things like that. Now, one of the things that I've noticed is that, like you said, when we migrate from China, you know, we don't necessarily try to take over. We basically make our own way. We adapt and we fit in. Every major city has like a Chinatown, right, that you can go to, and you see this community of people that are thriving. And we have Black Americans that have been here all that time, and we don't see that. And you and I had a long, in-depth conversation about that. And I want you to kind of break that down for us when we come right back after the break. Everybody, you are now tuned in to America's Living Room with Angela Stanton King, your favorite host. We're live on TNT Radio. We'll be back right after the break.
Are you ready for a global tax on your airline flying? There's one catch. It doesn't apply to private jets.
From Washington, D.C., this is the Morano Minute with your host, TNT Radio's Mark Morano.
The Washington Post is touting a report calling for a global tax on commercial flying, but not private jets, would require a global centralized system to track passports. Wow, that sounds fantastic. The report from the International Council on Clean Transportation recommends a frequent flyer tax that starts the second flight each person takes per year. If you fly enough, you could reach $177 for your single flight. Remember, in a declared climate emergency, you may only be able to fly once every 3 years unless morally justified. Bill Gates, Jeff Bezos, Hollywood celebrities, world leaders, corporate leaders, United Nations officials, all exempt from this, as private jet travel will not be impacted. Welcome to the Great Reset 2022. This is Mark Morano for the Morano Minute on TNT Radio.
Chris Domine is a husband, father, an athlete, even an Ironman. But 10 years ago, Chris's kidneys were failing.
The doctor said, if you don't get a kidney transplant, you are going to die.
Chris received a second chance, made possible by an organ donor.
Your well-being changes from loss of hope to better times ahead.
What could you make possible as an organ, eye, and tissue donor? Leave behind the gift of life. Go to organdonor.gov, U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Health Resources and Services Administration.
America's Living Room, with just a dash of common sense. Angela Stanton King on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Hey, everybody, we're back and we're talking with Larry Wu, a real estate expert here in China, doing a lot of great work. I mean, from China, here in America now, doing a lot of great work in our communities. Larry, before we left to go to the break, I wanted to talk to you about this difference in culture, and why do you think that it is that, you know, Black Americans have not created their own communities and the numbers are so low when it comes to home ownership?
Well, as I said, Chinese are very adaptive people, but while we are adapting ourselves to the new world, we also, you know, preserve some of our own wisdom that is rooted from our own culture, you know, thousands of years ago. One thing that is rooted in our culture is Chinese people really value the ownership of properties. So there's a statistics. I read it some years ago, so I do not remember the exact number, but I believe in United States the house ownership is like 70%. In Europe it's much lower, like 50%. In China, house ownership is like 90%. So it makes huge difference. And the world or the economy is operating in a way today, it makes it so convenient for people to live their life without a property ownership. You can move to a different city and rent an apartment in the next day and just move in with your suitcase, and everything is ready for you. And you don't think about own your own places. You can live and work like that for 30, 40 years until the moment of retirement. You suddenly recognize that for so many years, you keep paying the rent to somebody else, to the landlord, and all this money just gone. You have nothing left in your hand. So I always say it's very important for young people to start own the property as early as possible. And what happened in China in the past 30 years is the government has some program that it's both increase the budget or the income for the government without impose more tax on people, but also it provides people the market with much more supply of houses. What they do is, like, if a city is booming in China, a city is growing, the government will go, will do a great good city planning and go to a suburban area where it's basically empty land. So the land is very cheap. So the government will acquire the whole area of land. And then they will give some of the land for free, almost for free. It's not really for free, but there's some, you know, something behind that. But they give this land, the development rights, to some developers. So the developers do not have to pay for the land sometimes until they sold their houses. Therefore, the development cost will be reduced for the developers. And once the developer develops the land, and guess what? The government still owns the other pieces of land nearby. And the land in that whole area has appreciated. So the government can sell the rest of land and pocket a lot of money without taxing people. It's a business deal. I was like, that's so smart. Unfortunately, it's very difficult to do this in the United States, because in the United States currently, you know, they are very difficult to find large pieces of land unoccupied, and it's also difficult for government to go there, purchase land, and then do deals like a business person. However, I do think business can replicate the success of the business model, quote, business model, unquote, used by Chinese government in your cities, particularly fast-growing cities, Atlanta. So if we have, instead of have individual just going there, I buy a piece of land here, you buy a piece of land there, and you are competing against each other. That's what's happening. Like, if we have several, say, black people, you both have some savings, and one of them go somewhere, buy a piece of property first. And when the second people come to buy the second piece of property nearby, guess what? The price has gone up. So the second person has difficulty to afford it. And when the third, fifth, five person came, it's too expensive for them to afford it. And then the next three lots will become empty or not occupied, and in the long run, it's hurting everybody because there's not a community. There could be five families living there in the same area helping each other. Now you have only two people, the three other properties empty. If you go around Atlanta, you saw a lot of empty place, and the land itself is expensive. So my thought is, if we can, you know, just instead of go there individually, if we can put our money together, instead of going there one and one beat against each other, compete against each other, if we acquire a larger pieces of land, that will be very, very inexpensive because it's undeveloped. And then we divide the land and everybody just go there. It's like a fixed price for everybody. If you don't have money, you don't have developed now. If you have money, you develop right now. But the land price do not go up just because your neighbor have built a new house there. So that way, it will enable us to build a community without competing against each other. But I understand it's hard to persuade people to act connectively. So alternatively, a business like us, an investment fund like us, maybe a business model is for us to raise money and we do all this for the black community instead of you try like five people or 10 people or 20 people. It's very difficult for you to negotiate agreement between yourself and go there, act connectively. But if the 20 people, everyone put some money up there and invest into our company, we can do the same thing. We just go somewhere, acquire a piece of land, building something, and with a commitment that these houses will be sold at a fixed price or through some financing tools. But, you know, there's too many details I cannot explain here. But the goal is, and the logic is, if we can put money together and go there, build a community, and then the everything will be cheaper for everyone. If we just go there, you buy a community, you buy a house here, I buy the house next door, and the price keep goes up. And why it goes up? Because of yourself. You are competing against yourself.
Wow. Larry, that was deep, but overall, what you're saying, it makes so much sense. I mean, you guys are talking about coming together, putting your money together, buying land, developing property. And that's something that I would love, you know, to see happen in the Black community. But like you said, hey, if that's not happening, then we'll do it. And I know that you and I have some things in the works that kind of speaks along to those lines. And it's too premature to talk about now, but I think that that's an awesome idea. One of the things that I want to talk to you about, though, is you said something that made a lot of sense, and we've got about 5 minutes left. You talked about the economy, and we were talking about earlier whether or not China was a threat to the U.S., and you said you didn't believe so. Now, one of the things that I've noticed is basically everything that we own here in America is made over in China. So if we have an economy, right, and I think that to keep a balanced economy means that the money has to circulate within that economy, meaning that you build the house, I buy the house from you, and then someone else in the community is going to come run the electricity and house. Like, we keep the money in our economy. With so much money going out of the United States over into China, because everybody at this point is doing business with China. I mean, you can go around your house and pick up three things right now, and the bottom of it probably says made in China. What happens if the relationship between China and the United States ends? Because none of this stuff is being manufactured here in the US. So China could be a threat, but as of right now, they're a huge benefit. But what happens to the American people if they ever sever ties?
That's exactly the point. If there's one thing I think the U.S. administration, definitely not the Biden administration, they got it completely wrong. I mean, Trump administration, Trump tried to do something, but the thing with Trump is he's very intuitive. He work on things based on his own experience and instinct, but he's a great real estate person. He's a great business person. He knows American politics, but he doesn't really have that much knowledge about China. So he had the intention, but even him, he didn't get it right. And he only got 4 years. You know, he didn't have a chance to develop a better strategy. But one thing U.S. government should have done 10 years ago, 15 years ago, even 20 years ago is, every year, China is sending all these goods to the United States and making so much money. And it's stupid. You said, hey, we don't buy their stuff. Hey, their stuff is cheaper. Why don't you do that? If you stop buying things from China, you're hurting yourself. What you should do, United States should do, is not really force, but negotiate deals with China to make Chinese bring this money back into the United States. It's just like Angela, you just said, the money has to circulate. If all the money go to China and just stay there, it's not good for Chinese too. What you can do with all the US dollars, you know, you accumulate in your hands if you are not spending them. So United States must have a comprehensive campaign and a strategy to funnel, to facilitate investment from China, particularly into communities in the United States. Because right now, if you just let Chinese government do what they want to come here to buy all the high technology companies. They don't want to invest into the daily life of American people. Of course, they don't want. Why should they want? But United States government has a duty because it was American consumer paying for Chinese goods. And that's how the Chinese get all the money. And this the American consumer should benefit from those money Chinese has got. Ask them to bring them back, invest into the daily lives of American people, including real estate. If Chinese money coming back and building thousands of houses here, guess what? House price will come down. Everybody can afford a house. And why are we not doing that? Why we just let Chinese company coming here buying the technology products and high-tech companies, everything like that? The government should do something. American government should do something here. That's not just good for American, it's also good for Chinese. I'm Chinese, but I say that it's not for the benefit for American people. It's also a much healthier relationship between China and the United States, and it makes it more sustainable.
Wow. Everybody, that's our 30 minutes. Larry, you are going to have to come back. You are just a fountain of information. And I just love you so much for coming on the show and sharing your knowledge with everyone else. Everyone, that is Larry Wu. For more information on him and his company, you can visit ucasset.com. We're now going for break for news at the top of the hour. Larry, thanks so much for coming on the show. Everyone, you are tuned into America's Living Room with your favorite host, ASK. We're on TNT Radio Live.